What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go paper-tarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If you haven't heard, it's a good idea to fit probiotics into your daily routine. Fortunately, Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls make that so easy. These adorable little pearls couldn't be easier to take, and they support both digestive and vaginal health, all because of the probiotics. There are actually 1 billion active cultures protecting against occasional bloating, constipation, and digestive discomfort, all in one tiny little pearl. To learn more about Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls and how they can fit into your routine, visit naturesway.com.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in. I am Ben Bolin.
And I'm Scott Benjamin.
And today we're going to talk about something that has doubtlessly occurred to every single car driver, not only in the United States, Scott, but on the planet Earth.
Wow. Bold statement. What is it?
It's the service mileage milestones, like the maintenance milestones.
Oh, I got it. It's like the 30,000, the 60,000, 90,000, 120, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. What's the deal with that? Because we've seen before that there can be fact and fiction in your local mechanic garage, depending on the ethics of that mechanic.
Oh, there's quite a bit of fiction out there too. And I want to, we'll definitely talk about some fiction later on. Mm-hmm. But this is all about, I don't know, just mileage in general. Like, how long can you expect your car to last? Some of the top mileage that some individuals have achieved with their cars.
Oh, right? Yeah, the world record. We'll talk about that too.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll talk about, a little bit of preventative maintenance versus reactive repair type stuff. And what you should be watching besides the oil level in your car. Just mentioning some of these things along the way. This is kind of a catch-all mileage podcast.
And we can also point out some stuff about the way mileage can affect the selling price of your car. You know, what, for some reason, of course, people will say 59,000 miles on your car will make a significant price difference versus 60,000, just because that's one of the tipping points.
Interesting. Okay, I've heard the same for between 95,000 and 100,000. You top that 100,000 mark, suddenly you feel like you should get rid of it, but it's probably not going to be worth as much on the used lot. That type of thing.
Right.
Other thing we should talk about is severe versus normal use.
Oh, we should talk about that first,
because I think a lot of people have questions about what when you look in your owner's manual, or in your service manual. Some people have the service manual, which is, by the way, good for you if you do, because it's something you have to purchase in addition to the owner's manual.
It's something you should purchase in addition to your owner's manual.
Yeah, I know. The price can be a little bit daunting, I guess. You can pick them up at, the auto parts store.
Yeah.
$30, something like that. But if you order it through the dealership, it can be,
$50, $60.
$70, $80 or more. And, a lot of them now come on CD, so, that's a, or DVD, I should say.
Or Blu-ray.
Blu-ray. Yeah, I don't know if there's a Blu-ray.
I don't know. Probably not yet.
Service manual, but maybe. Either way, if you're looking through that for your maintenance schedule for your vehicle, you're going to find that there is a normal and a severe rating, I guess, for severe service, normal service. And you may have some questions as to, what's normal versus what's severe. Because you think, well, I'm not really, plowing snow with my truck, or I'm not...
Right.
I'm not using my car to haul any kind of heavy loads or towing or anything
sure,
like that.
Sure, I don't do the getaways for bank robberies anymore or whatever. Whatever the case may be.
Something like that. Yeah, so there's you know, everybody has their own situation.
And
going,
it's
right?
It's weird. I'm glad we're talking about this because another thing is strange is if you drive your vehicle the same way every week, you know, you do the same stuff, and we all kind of do with our vehicles, then it starts to appear normal for you, and it's very easy to lose perspective on what is strict versus normal maintenance.
That's right. So there's severe, there's normal, and you would be surprised to, you know, when you think about these points that I'm gonna mention here, you'd be surprised what constitutes severe usage of a vehicle. And, you know, it depends on where you go. There's a lot of different sites that will carry this information that kind of tell you or point you in the right direction if you are a severe use or severe schedule mm-hmm. person for mm-hmm. your vehicle, for your maintenance, or you should be a severe schedule. But, you know what I mean, Ben.
Absolutely.
All right. So there's a few points, and this is the key to this. If you answer yes to any one of these questions, that means that your vehicle is subjected to severe use.
Choose wisely, my friends.
Right. So are most of your trips less than 4 miles? Are most of your trips less than 10 miles and outside temperatures are below freezing? Right there, that sets a lot of people off because, you know, they live close to work and the temperatures at some point during the year go below freezing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even here in Atlanta, they go below freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Is the engine at low speed most of the time, you know, meaning you're not on highways
right
all the time. So if you take smaller roads to and from work, you're a severe use user. Your vehicle is subjected to severe use. Do you operate your vehicle in dusty areas?
That's such a weird, who drives in a clean room?
Well, you know what? We drive in heavy, heavy pollen here in the South.
Which counts.
It really does count because that clogs up air filters and it clogs up all the filters that you know, you get the idea.
Yeah.
Do you regularly carry heavy loads like a lift or or tow a trailer or even a car top carrier, Ben, counts as carrying a heavy load.
Wow.
Is there a lot of stop and go driving on your trip to and from work?
Of course.
Do you drive in very hot or very cold weather? There's another site that has, you know, 10 more of these things, Ben.
All right, hit me. I like these.
No, you do? Okay. So
yeah,
some of these are doubled up, but they come from, this next one comes from a site that does oil changes. That's their profession. It's
okay.
The Jiffy Lube site.
Oh.
So you can imagine that they're a little more apt to say that, yeah, you're subjecting yourself to severe use. But, again, do you drive in stop and go traffic, hot or cold temperatures?
Mm-hmm.
How about, prolonged higher engine speeds?
You can't win.
You can't win. You're right. I mean, smaller roads, yes. You drive at prolonged high speeds on the highways, yes. You're in severe use.
This is like those, do-it-yourself medical quizzes that are designed to make you feel like you have a terminal disease.
Yeah, you're right. No matter what you do,
you're right. This pill will fix you. Are you sometimes tired and then other times you're like awake?
It's like anything you've seen about allergies. Like, do you have allergies? Do you breathe ever?
Yeah.
Because, all right. So here's another one. Multiple cold startups each day. I think a lot of people do that. How about extensive engine idling? So if you're not even driving.
You're just in a traffic jam and you're just sitting in
exactly
your car in the parking
right.
lot.
And so you get mountainous terrain is another one.
Yeah.
All of these things, you know, point towards severe maintenance schedules, and they make a big difference in and the frequency of when you're suggested to have your oil changed.
Right, yeah.
And other maintenance as well, but oil change is the big one, I guess.
So, do you want to get into the oil change debate right now? Because we've talked about it before.
I guess we can a little bit. I can give you three examples here from the same site that says the difference between severe and normal use as far as frequency goes.
Okay.
All right. So 2003 Honda Accord 2.4 liter, normal service, you would go every 12 months or 10,000 miles. That's when they suggest.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
A severe service would cut that in half, 6 months or 5,000 miles. Same with a 2005 Ford F-150. You know, normal service is 5,000 miles, so that's not very often, but severe service would be 3 months or 3,000 miles. So that's kind of what every oil change place recommends is three months. Yeah, 3 months, 3,000 miles.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Another one that cuts it in half pretty much. The 2004 Chevrolet Trailblazer. Normal service would be 12 months or 7,500 miles.
Wow.
It's not bad, right?
Not bad at all.
For a big truck, right?
Yeah.
And severe service would be 3 months or 3,000 miles. So most people are operating already under the idea that I should change my oil under the severe maintenance schedule.
Yeah. And again, severe is a weird word because people don't typically think of their car activity as severe. However, you're probably running into these conditions, or at least some of them, on a fairly regular basis. Nothing bad is going to happen to your car if you change the oil every 3,000 miles.
And I'm
going to
add to that and check the other vital fluids, because that's what happens when you go in for a standard oil change. You check the vital fluids, and vital fluids are engine oil, coolant. Believe it or not, washer fluid is on your one of the vital fluids. Power steering, automatic trans fluid, brake fluid. You got it. So, in addition to all that, of course, you're changing the filter. And what's weird is if you look in your owner's manual or service manual, sometimes you'll find that they recommend changing the oil filter more often than they changing the oil itself.
Right. Yep.
Vitally important. So, these service manuals, the owner's manual, both are good sources. I'd say service manual maybe a step above because that'll give you a little more information.
Yeah.
But, look in there and you may be surprised at the frequency that they suggest versus what you've been told all along.
Right. Yeah. And I'm doing an experiment with, my poor old Monte Carlo right now too. I'm about 4,000, 5,000, since my last oil change. But I really don't think that I need it every 3,000 because it's a daily driver, but I'm pretty much just going to work.
You are doing nothing wrong, my friend, because I looked up in my service manual.
You have here today?
I have my owner's manual, I should say, not my service manual. But I found some interesting stuff here, Ben. I do it every 3,000 or 3 months, as you're supposed to.
And you have ever since I've known you.
And I sometimes will push it a little bit if I'm doing some highway driving. And I'm going to throw in one little exception here.
Okay.
Is that as my car gets older, because it has, you and I both have high mileage cars. Mine has 162,000 on it, I think, right now.
Mine's about 168, 169.
About every 1,500 miles or so, I go through about a quart of oil.
Oh, really?
So I know to check it at about 1,500 miles and add one quart. That's what I do. I check it all the time and keep up with it. But if it was still operating in the way that it did early on, it wasn't consuming any oil.
Right.
I found out today that, Ben, I could have been going 10,000 miles or 1 year between oil changes. That's what's recommended in my owner's manual.
Man, I love a Civic.
Now, severe use would be 5,000 miles or 6 months. And that's still above what we get from what we hear from the normal oil change.
Absolutely.
Places, your standard fast change. Now, a couple other things that surprised me on this, as we're talking about maintenance and maintenance schedules, and, each car has its own chart and graphs that you can find in the owner's manual. And you'll be surprised at some of the duration that things can last. I guess the longevity of some parts in your car. Cause I had always heard, spark plug changes. Let me quiz you.
Okay.
What have you heard about spark plug changes in the past? Do you remember how long they stay between spark plug changes?
Okay. So I've heard contradicting things about this.
I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's okay.
There's no wrong answer.
Because one of the recommendations I've got that I was actually going to bring up later in this podcast was 60,000.
60,000. Okay. That's longer than I had ever heard. I've heard either 25,000 or 50,000 is what I heard. Now you heard 60. And let me tell you, Ben, you're still way off on this.
Oh no!
Modern engines and modern spark plugs. Now again, this is modern vehicles, so maybe that's the difference. 110,000 miles, Ben, is what spark plugs should last in my car, for one example.
Oh yeah, now, okay. I've got another one. A 2000 Nissan Xterra is right around there, 105,000.
Okay, so these are lasting a lot longer than in the past. Now I know that. Recommendations change. So, you look up the information for, that 1978 Trans Am that I had.
Yeah.
25,000, you probably do need new plugs.
Yeah.
If not before that, because it was probably burning oil like crazy.
And then there's also, side note on the spark plugs. Part of it is that spark plugs last so much longer now because they're iridium tipped.
Yeah.
So the technology, as you say, is changing. And this means that in some cases, one model year to the next might have different service constraints and requirements. Scott, I got a little list I wanted to get your feedback on.
Sure.
All right. And this is kind of long, so I'll be brief with it and I'll just go through kind of laundry list style.
All right.
All right. These are some recommendations from our buddies over at carmd.com. Let's see how you feel about this.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So they say they have it broken down by mileage and maintenance. So at 7,500 miles, oil filter, brake pads, and rotors.
Okay.
Make sense?
Sure.
Okay. And they also, they note that oil and oil filter are the single most important maintenance procedure.
Oh, definitely. For a car. That's one that you need to just, you have to keep up with that regularly throughout the life of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to have a short life for that vehicle.
Yeah.
Very short.
All right. Brake pads, rotors, as we said, you know, stopping's important, especially if you feel brake shutter.
Okay. But, you know, you mentioned all these brake parts and equipment, but that kind of depends on the type of driving you do as well. If you do a lot of highway driving, there's a good chance that your brakes are going to last a lot longer than they would if you do a lot of stop-and-go city driving.
Right, because you're not hitting them as much.
Or at least the brake pads would. I don't know. Maybe there's you know, other things that I'm not thinking, other factors with highway driving that I'm not considering.
Yeah.
Higher speeds, trying to stop a vehicle from a higher speed has its own pitfalls.
Sure, or if you're always driving in really busy traffic, you'll have short bursts of high speed and then a lot of stop and go.
Mountainous areas where it's very intense braking.
Great call.
So there's all kinds of factors that go into these things.
And then drum brakes. Sorry, I still have a bad feeling about them. All right, 15,000 miles. This is when we get our tire rotations and our air filters. Is that correct?
Sure.
Quick question about air filters. How often do you think, we all know the old stereotype, right, of the guys who try to upsell unsuspecting customers by coming in with a really ratty looking, just tore up, filthy air filter and saying, this is your air filter, we should change it.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you think that actually happens? Is that a tall tale?
Oh, you know what? I don't, I don't know.
I want to put you in the spot.
Do they keep one on hand, like, that is just beat up and covered in dust bunnies, you mean? Is that what you're talking about?
See, I think they couldn't do that, even if somebody really did. I've never in my life run into someone who really did that. The worst I've ever run into is someone just recommending, unneeded maintenance.
Yeah, okay. I know that happens all the time. I'm gonna say, as far as people, you know, being just outright deceptive and holding up one that is a kind of a model.
Yeah, surely
air filter. I don't know. I'm going to say that places are more reputable than that now because they have a lot more to lose now, it seems like. People can catch them at things like
Word gets around.
Exactly right. Maybe the consumer reporter from the local news station is bringing in a dummy vehicle for them to work on and see what they say. You know what I mean, right?
I know exactly.
You want to be part of an investigation.
Yeah. Channel 5 investigation. Right?
Yeah.
30,000 miles, transmission fluid, drive belt, coolant hoses.
Sure.
Makes sense?
Oh, yeah.
All right. As we said, they said 60,000 for spark plugs. But as you had pointed out.
Again, check your owner's manual, check your service manual, because you'll find that some of these parts and fluids will last twice as long as the recommended, the recommended interval for changing, I suppose. If you go by a standard general thing, you got to go for specifically what your vehicle is made to withstand or made to the standards that it's built to.
I think it's fair to say that there's not really a silver bullet solution, overall maintenance solution that applies to every car, because even just when you factor in the differences between the vehicles themselves and then add on top of that the differences between an individual's use over time and then whomever they resold it to. Yeah, you got to learn your vehicle.
Here's a crazy example. You remember that rally car that we talked about where it required a complete engine overhaul?
Oh, yeah.
In 10 hours?
Yeah.
So, it depends on your use. I mean, that's obviously extreme use. I mean, 10 hours. Or drag racer who goes one pass and then has to rebuild the engine.
Yeah.
That's a quarter mile. So, and just a few minutes of idling maybe. So, that's also extreme. But, it depends on how you're using it and I guess the tolerances or the standard that your vehicle is built to initially.
Very good point. Like a high performance vehicle, versus a vehicle that's designed to be more reliable than a performance.
Requires a little more upkeep. And now we're talking about reliability.
Yeah.
And, so you've got some information on the car that's lasted the longest, I guess, maybe as far as miles go.
Oh, yes.
Well, you want to talk about, some world record mileage?
Sure. Yeah. Let's go ahead and do that. One thing I do want to point out, so just so people don't get perturbed with us, Scott, is that yes, the timing belt's also on our list and that one had a recommendation of 100,000 miles. A lot of people I know just don't check it until it pops.
That is an extreme hazard. And you know what? Around 100,000 miles on my vehicle, I was unaware of this, Ben.
Yeah.
Around 100,000, I started asking around about the timing belt and what I should do and how much was going to cost. And it was causing a lot of panic within myself. It was like an internal conflict. Like, as I knew my car was running fine, but I had to have this done, and it's an expensive repair.
Yeah.
Semi-expensive. It's a lot more expensive if you let it go and it breaks. That's
for
sure.
I mean, isn't everything.
And that's why I wanted to do it. But the problem was, my wife's car is getting to be about the same mileage about the same time. So thinking, okay, we got to go to the dealership twice to get this done, or a local person to do it. But it's going to be expensive. And I found out that the engine that's used in her vehicle is the same engine that's used in my vehicle. And they both have chains. They both have timing chains, which is very fortunate because we don't have to worry about belt replacement.
Right.
So you may dodge a bullet on something like that. If you may just have the attention of the chain checked, and that's all you have to do. So, it doesn't hurt to really investigate this stuff and find out if you need that repair.
Because
if you take it in for something like that, someone who's unscrupulous may say, we changed the timing belt. No problem, sir. And really it's a timing chain and it didn't really need anything.
So, that's the whole idea of those kind of unscrupulous offers. I think we covered some of that in an earlier podcast.
I know we did, yeah.
Yeah, but there's so many scams, but there are also, so many more amazing mechanics who will work with you. Like if you run into a mechanic who says, I checked your car and, it was this problem. It's actually really little. I fixed it for you. Don't worry about it. That's great.
Right. I think this is all part of our podcast on how to choose a mechanic or
that's
something
right.
like that.
That's right.
We went over some of the good and the bad, and it turns out that there's really a lot of really great mechanics out there.
Yeah. And, just for anyone who hasn't heard that episode, do pay attention. You'll enjoy it. And we'd love to hear what you say about it, especially if you're a mechanic. One of my favorite things that we found, which I have not done because I feel like it's a little dishonest. One of my favorite things we found in the course of the research for that was the recommendation that you go to if you're going to figure out if you can trust the new mechanic, that you show up there with a flat tire. and see if they just fix the plug it for you or if they charge you. And I thought that was a heck of a lot to go through.
Here's a simple one. You unplug one spark plug wire and kind of limp into the and see what they tell you.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a known problem. You know, right. And it may cost you a few bucks, but then you know if the person is reputable or not. And
right.
There's, I don't know, I'm kind of 50-50 about that trick.
I don't think the thing is just the whole concept of trying to figure out if someone is honest by playing a trick on them seems a little defeatist to me.
It's a little dishonest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're checking someone's honesty with some dishonesty.
Exactly. I don't think that's fair. Anyway, we're digressing a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
we're back to world record mileage.
Back to world record. Okay. To our hats off to you, our super producer, Noel. Could we have a drum roll, please, sir?
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. The car with the world's highest mileage, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, is a 1966 Volvo P1800S. From the great state of New York in the United States. Would you like to guess how many miles it has?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me this. All right, so I will guess. I'm going to guess, if this is a car, not a big rig, because I know these guys do it
right.
Regularly. I'm going to say it's just over 1 million miles.
Okay, you're going to go higher, because technically you're correct. It is over 1 million miles.
Oh, I'm saying like 1 million miles.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. In December 2010, it was 2,850,000 miles.
He is approaching 3 million miles.
Oh, he's exceeded it now.
In a car.
He's exceeded it now.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that Volvo, which is a great advertisement for Volvo, as of 2010, it was still being driven on a daily basis because it was going to car shows.
You said that was a P1800S, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a sharp looking car. I remember the body style.
Yeah.
Those are really cool with little
mid-60s,
fins on the back. I like that design a lot.
By a guy named Irvin Gordon, who officially gets the Car Stuff Prize for Best Maintenance Maverick.
Oh, what's the prize? A pat on the back? A firm handshake?
I guess just announcing that he won.
Fair enough. So do not wait by the mailbox for your free t-shirt or anything like that.
You know what? I know it still holds the world record, but I'm going to find out what's been happening with it recently, and I'll come back with some news on that next time we record.
You know, we're going to hear about this in the news when he tops 3 million.
I think he already has, dude, because it was just under like 150,000 short of 3 million in December 2010.
This guy gets around.
This guy literally gets around.
He really does. I mean, man, I wonder the things that he's seen in those nearly 3 million miles.
Yeah. That number is 4 years old. This guy is obviously over 3 million miles. And the only disadvantage I see about this for him, because I'm sure it's great for his reputation for Volvo. Volvo's got to love this guy. But, I wonder if he's still under warranty.
I wonder. You know what?
That's a thing.
Yeah, that is a thing. The warranty is an issue. And I found out some other interesting warranty facts, I guess, along the way when I was going through my owner's manual.
Yeah.
And just some of the research material that we dug up for some of these things, some of these stories that we were reading. They said you should really check out your car's warranty information that comes with the vehicle when it's new and find out exactly what's covered, because some items are covered beyond warranty. And that made me think, okay, well, what the heck is beyond warranty mean? You know,
right.
how far beyond warranty? Mm-hmm. And so I looked up in my owner's manual, or some supplementary information that came along with it. There's a specific warranty packet that comes along with it. And there are different warranty standards that are set for federal and for California emissions, or what they call California emissions, which actually here in the States covers California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maine, and Vermont.
Hmm.
And so you'll find that, you know, all these different things that are listed here, you know, like the fuel injection system or the crankcase control system, things like that, they have different ratings and, you know, in months and mileage between federal and what they call the California cars. And I found it interesting that there's a couple of exceptions to these rules that go beyond, you know, the standard warranty. Because, you know, back in 2005 when my car was new, I think it had a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty.
Okay.
On a lot of different things. And you'll find that if you go down this list, and I'll show you the list here, there's many things, 2 pages long,
yeah,
of warranty items and what's covered, what's not, and how long they're covered in, again, in months and mileage. And the standouts are, there's 7 standouts on this. And, you know, most of them are 336, as I mentioned. Some are three years, 50,000 miles. But then there's others that go way beyond that. And just as one example, the fuel tank, you know, like the, including the fuel tank vapor liquid separation unit and the vapor control valves, things like that.
What about the, okay. Yeah.
Those are covered for 7 years, 70,000 miles.
Wow.
So that's a significant amount of time beyond the standard warranty.
Pretty confident, Honda.
Yeah, I guess so. There's a couple that go beyond that, but the other ones, let's see, I'll mention just 2 more here.
Yeah.
The others are, let's see, the variable valve timing control actuator,
mm-hmm,
again, 770. Another one that's 770 is the intake manifold assembly. For whatever reason, they warranty that, you know, double what the standard warranty would be. Then there's two items that are warrantied for 8 years, 80,000 miles, which are significantly above the standard.
What are they?
The catalytic converter and the engine control module, which are both emissions items. So
it
kind of makes sense that they would warranty those a little bit longer. And you wouldn't find that, you know, a lot of things, you know, happen before that, I guess, you know, that, you know, you're not going to have any problem with your catalytic converter earlier than 80,000 miles, but I bet when you get it to about 100,000, you're going to find a lot of cars have problems with their catalytic. And that's just out of warranty. And that's where everybody gets really frustrated with cars.
So that's probably why they did it, which this brings me to something else, Scott, that we should talk about too. The old question that we have heard before on this show: how long can your car last? Is the mileage in some way like an expiration date? And let's not get into the whole argument about planned obsolescence and whether, you know, that's a real thing. But
just kind of the rule of thumb.
Yeah. Is there one? Yeah,
there is kind of a rule of thumb that has been around for a while with automobiles. And I'll go back to the 1950s.
Okay.
Okay. So, starting with about the 1950s until about the 1960s, you could roughly expect your cars to last about, you know, this is with routine maintenance. So you're doing all your preventative stuff, you know, just as you would.
But no, like, big rebuild or anything.
No, exactly. This is, you can expect them to last about 100,000 miles. That's fairly typical. That was kind of the lifetime of a vehicle. And I've heard that for years. I mean,
100,000.
You know, about 100,000 miles, and that's about it, right?
Ooh.
That's all the way through the 1960s. But by the time we got to about the 1990s, the longevity of a car increased significantly. I mean, the reliability, the longevity, the long-term use of the car went up to about 200,000 miles. So it doubled by about 1990. And through the 90s, that was about the same. But now, you know, as we're in, you know, like the 2014 now.
Sure.
You can pretty much expect a new car, if you keep up with the service schedules and the maintenance and everything, you know, even just oil changes and the really simple routine stuff, you can expect your car to last about 250 to 300,000 miles on average. And that's not everybody's, you know, situation. I mean, I know that there's dramatic extremes, you know, one way or the other. I mean, take that guy, you know, with, I don't know what year that vehicle was that made it to almost 3 million miles.
Mm-hmm. Probably 66.
So, okay, so 1960s. His car was expected to go probably about 100,000 miles, and here he is, you know, approaching 3 million miles. So you understand there's variation in this, but, you know, you got to think about it this way too. You know, at about 15,000 miles per year, it would take more than 13 years to reach about 200,000 miles. And that's, you know, 15,000, that's, I think that's the national average here in the United States, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
15,000. Mm-hmm. So, do most people really keep a new car that long anyways? I mean, because I think that this mileage thing comes up with people buying used cars.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think that this is more of a concern with somebody who buys a car off of a used lot that has 150,000 miles, and they say, oh, boy, I don't know, 150,000, I can't really expect to get much more out of this than this year.
Right,
So I'm only going to pay X number of dollars for it. But the honest truth is you may be able to get double that out of that car. So you may be able to hang on to that for another 10 years, you know, if you drive 15,000 miles a year. And that's not bad, really.
And if you have a used car, to flip it a little bit, if you have a used car that you're seeking to sell yourself, then records are your friend. People will trust you much more if you just keep a little logbook where you write down the date of repairs.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I mean, you got to really think about this. You know, that car that you buy today in 2027 is going to have 200,000 miles on it. Are you still going to have that car that you bought new off the lot, you know, this year?
Yeah.
Likely not. You're likely going to trade it in, but the next person, they may need to consider that. They may need to think, all right, it's going to approach, you know, 300,000 miles. I will have an expiration on this car at some point. You know, I'm going to have to worry about this. But it has to be a vehicle that was built now. You can't go to a lot right now and buy a car from the 1970s and expect it to get 300,000 miles.
Just off magic.
It would have to be something that's relatively new that has, you know, these higher tolerances, these better standards. You know, the cars now, we've talked about this so many times, Ben, but cars are built in such clean environments and to such high tolerance. Or, I mean, you know, the tolerances are so great on these cars. Am I saying that the right way?
Yeah.
They're built very tight compared to what they were. It was a little more fast and loose with the way that they built them in the past. Not that they weren't great engines. They weren't great, you know, systems overall.
Well, they didn't have the benefit of all the software and the massively intelligent computers that we're using.
The extreme precision machines that put together some of these cars that we own and drive today. Mm-hmm. And it makes a huge difference in the longevity of them. And we're seeing that with, you know, the mileage jumping up from, you know, 100,000 in the 50s and 60s all the way up to, you know, 300,000 now. I mean, if you bought a car now expecting that, you know, it can last 300,000, that puts a whole different spin on your attitude as to whether you should buy a car or not, really. I mean, is it going to be worth it? Because people think, am I going to have this thing paid off? When I'm done paying it off in 4 years or five years, you know, what's the mileage going to be? Is it worth hanging on to? Well, sure, maybe at this point it is.
Sure, yeah. If I buy a used car and finance it, am I going to be saddled with a car note for a car that doesn't exist?
If you're planning for the long term, then maybe it does make sense for you. We've had that argument as well because we've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, right. And let alone the idea of leasing a vehicle.
Yeah.
But that's a story for another day.
I think it's one we've already told. As a matter of fact.
It is.
Oh, you know what? Last thing. I mean, man, one last thing, and this is kind of important. I'll just really quickly hit it.
Yeah.
The problem when you take your car to the dealership sometimes is that the service manager is there telling you or holding in his hand a clipboard with that maintenance rundown that you gave earlier.
Mm-hmm,
you
know, that list.
Yeah, when you come in and you have 35,000 miles on the car and he says, I know you're here for an oil change, and we can get that done for you.
But it's time to do your brakes.
Exactly right. And, you know, we also would like to inspect the timing belt at this time, and we're going to rotate those tires for you.
Your coolant is a little muddy. Not sure what happened, but probably need to flush
it. Good point. And I noticed that your brake reservoir is a little bit low, so that means that indicates wear on the pad, so we better check that system for you for you as well.
Oddly enough, the wear on your tires is a bit abnormal. So we're just gonna go ahead, and sometimes the way they talk about it, and they're being very helpful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Especially at a dealership, but sometimes the way they talk about it, it may, especially if you're uncomfortable, it might make you feel like they're already doing it, but you can always say, don't do it.
Yeah, that's right. Cause it's suggested maintenance at that point.
Right.
Because you're in there for an oil change. Just get the, say, I'd like to get, you can be polite about it. You can say, you know, I'll have the oil change done right now. But I'll think about the tire rotation. I'll think about having you check out that other stuff. But today, let's just stick with the plan. And don't feel bad about doing that. The thing is, you don't want to rush in that situation when you're there and make a decision that could cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's suggested maintenance, and it's actually a nice service that they provide. That they say, you know, we recommend you do this to keep your car running in the future. I get that. I understand.
Think of it like an alarm clock or a reminder on your phone.
But the other angle of this, and you have to look at both sides, the service manager makes a little bit of money on, you know, what he sells you. That, you know, he's successful if he sells you this package deal.
Oh, I see.
Because it's something that's going to come at a cost. It's not something they do for free typically. So look at both sides of it. The overall angle here, the overall message that I want to tell you is don't rush, because there's a lot of money that could be spent unnecessarily at this point, and just maybe go home, think about it, maybe do a little bit of research on everything and find out, you know, is it really time for me to change those spark plugs at $35,000?
Yeah.
Because I just heard on the Car Stuff podcast that, hey, that 2005 Honda didn't need it for 10 years and 110,000 miles.
Right.
Maybe that's more typical, but let me see what my car requires.
And you know what? That's such a great point. I want to add on to this as well. There's nothing better than going under the hood of your car yourself. Even if you don't think that you'll find the problem or be able to tell the difference between something, you absolutely can. All you need, just have a little bit of a homework time with yourself, do a little bit of a study hall, and you cannot beat looking at your own car yourself.
Sure. And by all means, service managers are good at what they do.
They really are.
But you just have to look at both sides. And that's something that you should always do. Just be a wise consumer. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. So we want to hear who in the audience has the highest mileage car ever.
Yeah, that's right. Don't write in with 100,000 miles or even 200,000. I mean, if you've got a car or truck that's hanging out in the back part of your property there that has 500,000 or 800,000, something like that.
You think someone's got something like that?
I wonder. Yeah, I really do. I mean, I wonder if someone's got a car that they just relentlessly drive on the highway. You know, a salesman that is constantly putting 800 miles a day on a car.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of people that we want to talk to.
Some of my, it's funny, one of my friends growing up, his family had a car that had been with them for like three generations, and they called it the Roamer. It was horrible, but it was always for like the kids when they could start driving.
Sure.
To drive around because, you know, they weren't going very far.
It doesn't matter if you bump something in a parking lot.
And then they would end up taking on road trips where it always broke down. But they would still repair it.
So no lesson learned.
not for two generations easily. We'd love to hear those stories. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are Car Stuff HSW. You can also check out our own website. That's right. We're moving on up to the east side of the internet. We are carstuffshow.com.
Big time.
Big time. We're fine. You know what? We should change the name of our show to Big Time.
Maybe.
And in the meantime, if you have suggestions for an upcoming episode, we'd like to hear from you. Send us an email at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Viking. Committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.